we are burning down the house here every Thursday on heritageradionetwork.com, in which we tear down and build up the elements, the attitudes, the ideas, opinions, biases that inform and direct the creation of our built environment. Sponsored by TechServe, your number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer on West 23rd Street in Manhattan. And did you know that they have a pro audio department? Not only that, but they have a great selection of high-definition monitors, everything related to the Macintosh. Here we are, coming to you from Studio A of Heritage Radio Network in the garden of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, actually East Williamsburg Industrial Park in the city of New York, on a rainy, cold October evening. It was bound to happen, and now we're suffering for all that good weather that we had at the end of the summer. In studio this evening, talking about design, especially the interior design elements that populate our built environment, we have Manuel Saez, a designer of many beautiful things. Rich Thrush, the man from Thrush.
You got it right.
And he also designs some beautiful things and some ugly things. We're going to talk about...
More ugly than not.
We're going to talk about, when it comes to design, the good, the bad, the ugly, the butt ugly, and the criminal. Because we think in these terms, we designers, don't we, fellas? You know, we think about, wow, that's beautiful, that's ugly. I wanted to start out with some, you know, softball lobs here. You all know this one. This is Richard Sapper's Tizio lamp, which was ne plus ultra cool in 1972. It's in the MoMA collection. It's this skeletal black and red halogen lamp. And MoMA celebrates this for being, let's read this, breakthrough design that changed the look and our expectations of task lamps. Well, you know, in 1969, I had a Luxo lamp that was articulated. It didn't do anything that this lamp didn't do. And at $400, okay, if you're a MoMA member, you can buy it for $360. It's a freaking little 50-watt halogen.
'70s?
Yeah, 1972, it says.
It's got some of the ugliness of the 80s.
Yeah, well, I think it was the predecessor for those ugly cars in the 80s. So, I mean, this is celebrated, but now
10 years from now, people are going to buy, they're going to pay more than that. I think they're going to love it. It's coming back.
You know, there's not architects of a certain age, over 50 and less than dead, almost without exception, you go in their houses or offices, there's going to be a Tizio lamp. It's become an icon of, I have good taste.
Yeah.
You know, it goes along with having bought some kind of iconic chair that cost
the people that bought
fortune.
Those probably bought a Volkswagen Fox. You know? Which probably back then they loved it.
Volkswagen Fox, doesn't it? But then the Fox was, maybe 15 years after this. Another celebrated chair that I wanted to talk about is the it's the Eames rocker.
Now you're getting personal.
Now I am. Now, you know, I mean, I love almost everything that Ray and Charles Eames or Eames and Saarinen or the Eames Studio design. But when I look at this with the polypropylene shell, which, you know, if you just step back and you say, well, that's like half of an old-fashioned bathtub that's been sawed in half. And then it's on airplane struts, so like parts from a biplane on a couple of wooden outsized runners. Well, this doesn't move forward the whole design notion of a rocker. It's rocker qua rocker. And it's, you know, it's awkward. It's strange. It's taking parts that came from other chairs and making a design statement. And yeah, I have to say that it's, to my mind, it's ugly. It's wrong. What do you think?
Well, it's a different time, right? I mean, if you bring it in this time, it is indeed kind of ugly. But at that time,
it's
modern, and I mean the fiberglass construction.
I know that was very
pretty hip for that time.
All right, okay, they had fiberglass.
I'm not pushing it as everybody should go out and buy one for $168. Is it really that cheap?
That's a knockoff.
Oh, this is a knockoff. Okay,
well they go up to $479.
Yeah, it's got to be more like $500.
But you know what I think in that chair, I think it's.
Could you come closer?
It starts with the notion of a nicer shell, but I think it just evolved to the rocker. And
well, they make other chairs with this shell.
There's a four-legged version of this.
Yeah,
which is a nice chair.
And that makes sense. This doesn't make sense with the clown feet rockers.
I'm sure somebody was trying to round out their line. I'm sure they're looking for one more skew.
I don't know that that's an honest enterprise.
Sometimes is they have a standard product, and this is a chair that they have, and an architect somewhere or an interior designer somewhere says, "Oh, I love that chair. It's a rocking chair." And there
it's
we
possible.
Go. They would just disguise the chair to be a rocking chair.
It's
and
possible
becomes
that someone at Herman Miller said, "Oh, you know, I would love to rock my grandchild in a version of the because the seat is so comfortable." But that doesn't make it good design. And when you actually look at what it is, it's weird. And I think, you know, Bucky Fuller said, "If I have a problem and I'm trying to solve it, if in the end it's not beautiful, I know that I made a mistake." Now,
well, I mean, that's subjective, right? I mean, what is beautiful? Some people, I'm sure there are some people standing up in their chair and like right now at home
saying, "But this is beautiful."
They probably love it, right? I mean, they're probably sitting in the chair listening to your program.
I think that's because you have if you have a beloved child and
it could be a little ugly.
And it's ugly, and you're going to say, "Oh, but she has or he has beautiful hands." "Oh, I love the color of his hair." But that's a good place to start. Now, other examples of interior design, sticking with the chair motif, which are ugly because you can't really use them without hurting yourself. My exhibit A and B are these chairs designed by Frank Lloyd Wright.
Oh, put it away, put it away.
I thought you were going to say the red and blue chair by Garrett Reidfeld.
Well, you know, well, let's talk about that in just a second. These chairs, and you can, if your listeners go to my companion blog, which is listed on the main page, which otherwise is burningdownthehouse-radioarchitecture.blogspot.com, you'll see a picture of this group of chairs and a table with light fixtures integrated with the table. Now, I mean, what a stupid idea. You got to look around the light fixtures to talk to the people you're having dinner with. Talk about a monument to a designer's ego. It's like, you know, "I'm so cool." He was in a stickly mode here. But more to the point, the chairs have the spreader so low that you would hurt your ankles getting in and out every time he used it. And even Wright himself admitted years later that that was a mistake.
But do you think that he was trying to make a comfortable chair or he was trying to make a statement?
I think he was trying to make a statement. And in that way,
it's like
dating someone that you think's really great and then being nasty to them. I mean, looks aren't everything. It has to be unity of intent and purpose, I think, to be beautiful design. It has to be beautifully conceived.
Well,
and
you know, I could see him going through the process, right? And you know, usually you've got all these concepts. You're spreading them out on the table or whatever, on the computer screen nowadays probably. But and he's making the choices of, you know, do I want to go for the most comfortable chair or do I want to go for something that really is visually stimulating,
piece of art that really should never have been supposed to be a chair.
In a museum rather than in a house.
That's right.
And that's probably...
Well, let's get back to the red, blue, yellow chair.
The Reidfeld chair.
The Reidfeld chair. at Wave Hill. You know the estate that's up the Hudson in Riverdale? Have you ever been there?
I haven't, no.
It's really worth the excursion. It's a little hard to get to if you don't have a car, but, you know, find someone who's got a car. So Wave Hill is this really big estate with a few different houses and various important or famous people of the 20th century have stayed there from time to time. The conductor Stokowski, who, if you've ever seen the Disney movie Fantasia, Stokowski is conducting in that one. So he lived there for a while, and other people have lived there. But the reason I'm bringing up the Rietveld chair is that instead of having Adirondack chairs, which you'd expect in a Hudson River estate, they have built their own Rietveld chairs. They're not painted red, blue, white, and yellow. They're just painted battleship gray, but they're in the perfect proportions. And I have to tell you, they're very comfortable.
Yeah, they're relatively comfortable for being a
chair made out of
extrusions of straight lines.
All straight and, planks. It was, you know, I sat in one and I was really surprised. It was comfortable. And in that way, then I could overlook the fact that it was painted gray, although I kind of like battleship gray.
What about that? I mean, do you think it looked better in one color instead of
all those different colors?
Yeah,
I think the different colors were distracting because it made you have to think about de Stael and Cubism and Mondrian. And if I'm sitting in a chair, maybe I don't want to think about Mondrian. But so we've set the stage for the, you know, the revelation that amongst designers sitting around having a couple of beers, opinions differ about what's good and what's bad. It might look good and be bad design because it's uncomfortable. It might be comfortable and look harsh, like a bunch of razor blades, like the Rietveld chair. No, I'm good for now.
Well,
Manuel is passing out the 6-point. Thank you.
Killing the 6-point, apparently.
Yeah, well, that's something we do here at Roberta's. We drink Brooklyn beer, and we enjoy the Brooklyn garden. So how do we make any sense of what's good, what's bad? Some things, I think, are just indisputably ugly. You could argue the merits of the Tizio lamp. We were talking about this fine piece of air conditioner that sits in the studio. It's left over from the summer. It hasn't gone away. It probably won't ever go away.
Is it an air con or is it
it's one of these
dehumidifier or something?
No, it's an actual air conditioner that throws the heat out through a elephantine tube that sticks out through the doors.
DeLonghi.
It's a DeLonghi. And it's ugly in the way that R2-D2 is cute. This is R2-D2 like, and
it's China.
Really kind
do.
Of ugly.
I think DeLonghi
I'm
is
sure
a
that
China
this is Chinese.
Name.
This one.
Yeah.
Well, you talk, and I'll look at the label.
All right. I'm sure. But certainly, it was manufactured in China. I mean, I don't know where it was.
But what
designed,
makes
but
what makes this ugly? I think is that.
Oh, look at that!
It's just kind of. We'll come over here, and we'll have a look at the back.
I like the.
You like
the dryer tube.
You like the dryer tube better.
Yeah, well, you better
actually
watch yourself with that.
The dryer tube actually gives it some sort of definition because it's bilaterally symmetrical here.
It's not very cohesive. I mean, it's cohesive in that it's a huge block, but it's kind of
broken.
Yeah, a little jagged.
Well, it only says that it was made in China. Surprise, surprise. But, you know, it's dark gray, and then the front is this, tan value 2 shiny plastic that shows all the scratches, and then it's got a little funny oval elliptical control panel with the
like
touch-sensitive things.
Very
integrated.
Is that new? Looks
really this is new.
Innovative.
Yeah, but none of the controls would tell us, other than the big dot over here by itself with the slash that means on off, what any of these things does. So there's no sort of visual clue as to fan over here, degrees of cool over there. So in a way, because it's inscrutable, I would say that it's ugly.
But ugly.
It doesn't work very well either. This is Jack.
At all, maybe?
Thank you, Jack.
It doesn't work very well.
Wasn't that interesting? It's not only ugly, it sucks. Or it blows. I don't know. It doesn't blow hard enough.
Just a little both.
And it doesn't suck well enough.
You take turns.
So what in recent designs have you come across that is just... We've gone from, you know, the moderately ugly, just the you know, the stuff that we have to live with in life, so much of it is painful to see that I think eventually people who live in an environment that's cluttered with ugliness just shut off to their visual environment.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that people are shopping today based on strictly functional value. And if it's ugly, yeah, that's what Walmart is. I mean, it's in a way, it's kind of beautiful because they're just making the choice based on, well, yeah, you're designing stuff for guys that make like 200 grand a year. I'm talking about the guy that makes like 35 grand a year in
Well, that's true. Manuel
Chicago,
designs
right?
beautiful chairs that, for example, I looked at your website and you have some very nice stackable powder coated steel and polyethylene stacking chairs that are probably very, very comfortable, but that's for contract interiors, and only companies that have a decent budget for buying that are going to be making those available for people to enjoy.
But what I'm going is
come closer.
The iPhone, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think
that's,
you buy
right.
that on style, yeah. on looks. You don't buy that because of the function.
Yeah,
you certainly don't buy it because it's a good phone.
It's definitely not a phone.
People buy it because it's a computer.
No, it's an application device. I mean, they have great applications, but not a good phone. So then,
yeah, I mean, they're on a good run. It's undeniable.
They're doing something
for
right.
sure. I mean, it's crazy. Every product they do is successful, whether it's beautiful or not. I mean, I think most people would agree that they're simple and nice, but. Are they beautiful? I mean, it goes back to that kind of like Dieter Rams beauty. I like them, but I think, yeah.
I don't think they're beautiful at all.
No?
No.
Tell me why.
Well, I don't like the chromed edge.
Okay.
I think that's kind of retro in a disturbing kind of way. I'd rather see it be black all over, black face and black body. I'd rather be holding a piece of graphite-looking thing that happened to light up on one face, and
so you'd rather have Dieter Rams design it or something, or
yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen that the website where they compare the modern Apple designs to the
listener,
old Dieter Rams designs? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, for the listeners who don't know who Dieter Rams was or is, give us some background there.
He's a German designer for Braun or Braun. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're American. He was one of the...
Did he do the famous travel clock, for example?
Sure, yeah. Of course, or a cylindrical lighter.
Yeah.
I can't remember the model number offhand, but
yeah.
There is... I have to go back and look.
So many good things.
Was it
you did.
Fast Company that did that? That website? Who did
the monochrome.
Website?
The monochrome products.
There's
yeah.
there's
ID
a website...
Magazine. ID Magazine.
ID did?
Yeah.
yeah. Where they
compare the
60s
designs, yeah.
Dieter Rams Braun designs with the modern Apple designs. And it's pretty you're comparing a box to a box in most cases, mm-hmm. right? A box with
well-proportioned
radiuses.
What I liked
about
the Braun travel clock is that it had a green button that went up or down,
mm-hmm.
and a green or red button on the front for I want to snooze. And that was all you needed to touch on the clock, you know, until you had to readjust the time.
Yeah.
But they kept good time, so... In between batteries, you didn't have to touch it at all, and you know, on the iPhone, it's not clear how you turn it on and how you turn it off. You have to read the instructions or be part of the iPhone cult to know that there's a hidden little button on one edge that turns it on, and then there's a big button on the front that turns it off.
Well, it is a much tougher job to design an iPhone than it is to design a clock, because
yeah.
a clock has three functions, maybe, or three interactions, yeah, but right? With, I mean, but there's with, like 300
But with computer
of
interfaces,
with
why can't the button on the front turn it on and turn it off?
It could. I mean, but maybe do you want to have that confusion? I don't know. I don't know what their decision process was when they were laying it out. I mean,
we're all used to button on, off,
yeah,
toggling. You know, that's been a function with electrical devices for, I don't know, 80 years. So
I love the idea of having that, but when you've got one button on a phone that does 300 things, I would be tempted to use it for other things as well.
And, I'm hard-pressed to say that I think that the iPhone is a beautiful object. It's certainly utilitarian.
It's beautiful when it's off. I don't know if it's beautiful when it's on.
I don't know that it's beautiful when it's off. I don't like the chrome casing. I think that's wrong.
Well, they have a new one with a white background and the white in the back and the black in the back.
It's still white and black. Why
can't
it all be
black? I think you've got them sold,
Manuel. Huh?
I think you've got them sold.
Yeah, well.
I don't know.
No,
I think it looks good and it works like crap.
The phone doesn't work.
I
don't have one, but...
I had one. And I'm back on a BlackBerry.
Yeah.
I just couldn't deal with it. Too many drop calls. The phone doesn't work. And that's what I need.
Yeah. I used to work for Motorola and now I have Samsung phones, so... I don't know what that says.
You sold out.
Yeah.
That's what it says.
I liked my LG knockoff on the Motorola Razr until it just stopped working one day after a year and a half.
Hopefully it cost half as much.
It was very... I did. It was free because...
You can buy two
Verizon,
for the price of the Motorola.
That's right.
Hey, what about ugly phones? Is there any favorite
ugly?
Favorite ugly?
Yeah. Like... I'm definitely not having that one.
Well, there's a Samsung that's still in production for your low-end program that you get, you know, like 20 minutes a month, and it costs you nothing.
The freebie, right? The
giveaway. Yeah, and it looks like a worn-down bar of soap, but it's the clam type, and it flips
Americans
open.
Love clams. You know, it's weird. In America, that's like the top. In Europe, they hate them.
I know.
They like the all-in-one.
They like the candy bar. I mean, we used to call them candy bars. I don't know what they call them.
Stick
phones, is that the... Yeah.
Well, the problem with those originally was that they dialed from your pocket. But I guess they've gotten over that somehow.
You lock them,
a lock
button.
Yeah. Well, your BlackBerry could start dialing also, but there's so many buttons that the possibility that it hits the space bar and then again and, you know,
You can lock them up.
And you can lock them up.
But there's Verizon, and they have such a good taste, and I'm being sarcastic. But
they're making choices based on features and cost, right?
Well, what about the chocolate phone?
Which one is that?
Oh, it slides open. Have you seen that?
And I've seen the commercial.
It's just really sort of stupid, really. Yeah. It's just one of these multifunction, and it slides open to give you an eensy-weensy keyboard.
They're obviously playing off of any, you know.
But
any
the, I would
right
say there. That, I, without a doubt, the old clam style phones that are, you know, the size of a baby's fist, but they flip open and they're are just they. I mean, they look like sort of like a split turd, you know.
I think people like them because the buttons are so big. You know, if you're an American, you have a big American hands.
They like it because they're free.
Yeah.
Well, then there's
they
that.
Like them because they get it free with a $29.99 plan, right?
Because that's what you get when you get a basic plan, and that's the way it is. You know what? In Europe, they have a Motorola phone that I'm not sure what kind of a screen they have. They have a screen that is monochrome, not very fancy at all. It's just a phone, and it's $20, and you buy it anywhere. You can buy it in the post office.
Well, you can get a track phone for about $20 from Walmart now. It'll give you unlimited phone calls and texting for like $40. It was in the Wall Street Journal today. And that little track phone, which is like the little bar of soap thing, has a color screen. I mean, it's a tiny little color screen. There's not much to look at, but it has a sort of, some of them have a little cuteness to them because they're tiny.
Well, I mean, there's a certain beauty in that. I mean, whether you call it ugly or not, right? I mean, it's functional, and it's just for the people who have $20 and they need to make a call. That's beautiful to them, whether it's ugly to us or not.
Well, Let's take a little musical break, and when we come back, I would like to talk about ugly things that we might have designed. Get anything you want. No dust, no rocks. The whole thing is over. All those beauties in solid motion. All those beauties gonna swallow you up. Was of course Talking Heads with Swamp, and there are swamp critters that each of us as a designer has over time unfortunately designed. But first we have to say that this is Burning Down the House on heritageradionetwork.com, brought to you by TechServe, engineered by Jack Inslee. EJ Dukoski is our producer, here with our guests Manuel Saez and Rich Thrush. Sorry, I forgot that. It strikes fear into me because I grew up in
the man from Uncle.
Man from Uncle, and Thrush was the one of
the good guys.
Evil empires.
No, they were always the good guys.
Always fighting. Thrush. Thrush had cooler tools than the Man from Uncle. I wish they would bring that back in reruns because, you know, they had great. Set design, you know.
Is that from the 80s?
No,
60s. Late 60s.
Napoleon Solo had this silver pen. It looked like a Lamy pen from the middle, late 70s. Remember when Lamy made pens that looked like a stick of graphite?
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple of those. You drop them once. They were fountain pens. You drop it once, it leaked forever.
Yeah,
it could never get fixed. But it looks so great.
Is that good? Do you think that's good? Or that's does that fall into your...
No, it was great.
It was great for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was my fault that I kept putting it in my pocket and leaning over and having it fall out. I should have put it in my coat pocket or leave it on the table.
Rather than the Bic, the ugly Bic that lasts you 10 years?
Well, the ugly... God, you know... Bic has been a cheap pen since the beginning. The early ones that were clear plastic, you know, they were great if you needed...
They're still here.
They're still around.
They're still running.
The stick pen has never gone away. The problem that I had with the Bic is they don't write very well.
No, they don't.
You know, they
have no glamour.
They have a kind of like downside appeal of it only cost 9 cents. So
that's a downside?
If you're into, into the extreme Quaker or Buddhist kind of thing, it's fine. So I can think of one chair that I designed that was really ugly, and I'm so glad that I wasn't able to sell it to anybody. I had this notion that because everyone has back problems because of pressure on their spine, that a chair should be... It should conform to both sides of your body, but that down the middle, it should just be split. It should just be open all the way down, all the way along your spine. You know, and I actually went so far as to model it, you know, with plasticine. And, I mean, it looked like an animal's brain, you know. It was really undeniably ugly. And I'm so glad that no one wanted it, because it would have been a great embarrassment to me. Have you ever, either of you
seems
had a...
Seems like a good idea.
Well, it seemed like a good idea, but...
Sometimes the ugly ones are the ones you pull out, and they're really iconic, and they end up living a long time, you know?
And they push it through. I don't know how, but they're...
So neither of you is admitting to ever having designed anything ugly.
I do it every couple months, for sure.
So, Rich, your work involves things, medical devices and so forth.
I work for a company called Kaz, right? And we design for brands. We design some stuff for Braun. We design some stuff for Vicks and Honeywell. And there's 11 brands we design for. One of them is a Stinger, which happens to be right here in the room. I have no idea. Manuel must have brought this.
You designed...
I didn't design this, but I did work on this a little bit.
We're looking at a bug zapper.
It's a Stinger brand bug zapper, which I don't know why you guys have in your studio. I don't know.
Well, we get bugs in here.
The garden, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, in the summer, pizza
but
is
forbidden from
being
in the
studio. But
this one isn't that bad, but I gotta say, it's not beautiful.
Now, for the listener who's not sitting in front of their computer, it's kind of like an elongated Japanese lantern. It's round in plan section, but then it in elevation, as you look straight at it, it bows out in the middle, and it has all these fins with a little bit of a hat that flares some at the top, and there's a hook so you can hang it up, and in the middle are the killing rods. And
I think, you know,
it looks
the reason why you end up with stuff like this, or I'm not making excuses for myself, because we just did one which I actually really like. It's just a pure cylindrical pill shape, which I would put up at my house if I had a yard, but I don't.
A pill? What do you mean by a pill
like
shape?
A pill shape, like truly a pill, like a cylinder with full radiuses at the end. You know, like a pill.
I mean, it was squat, like a really big aspirin.
No.
Like a really big Tylenol or something.
Oh, I see. Like a capsule.
Yeah, a capsule. Yeah. But,
So why did this happen? What happened here, Rich? Tell me about it.
What were you thinking? I think, you know, the way that you end up with things like this are that you start off with a bunch of design concepts, which some are really simple, and they're made for, you know, architects or whoever, right? But some are heavily styled. This happens to be heavily styled.
How is it that made for architects is different from everybody else?
I think architects are more willing to accept an extreme design concept or a very simple design concept. When you go into an architect's home, they tend to be simpler and less styled, less superfluously styled.
So this was...
I think this is superfluous styling to me.
Curves. Unnecessary curves.
I think so.
Unnecessary shapes.
Well, now, that's why I don't like this. Yeah, but in particular, some people love this.
Who buys
but,
this?
But the
well,
curves
this go, you know
may
this
have
goes,
made this stronger, actually.
This is
because
I'll tell you, it sells very well. It's been selling very well for 8 years at Walmart.
Really?
You know, so there people like it. I mean, I don't know what your judgment of good or bad is, but
do they have an option?
Yeah, I mean, there are other bug zappers there, but I don't know what the competition is anymore, but I'm sure there's DeLonghi bug zappers.
No, I find this disturbing because the curve doesn't seem to mean anything. It sort of suggests that it might be a basket, because you could see a hand-woven basket that would have a bulge like that. No, it's too tall for a beehive. And then yet it's black. I mean, if maybe it was cast in a light brown plastic,
well,
it would
look
like a basket.
Why it ends up where it is, and it's really because of cost. This is something that sells at Walmart for, I think, like $15.99, and this happens to be recycled plastic. So you can't get recycled plastic in colors. You can't change it to beige. You get black. If you want to play at $15.99 with the guts that are in here, with the bulb and the killing grid and the transformer and the 120-volt cord and everything, you're cutting pennies. Yeah. I mean, it's not like Manuel where you're designing a chair and you can make a decision one way or another on a dollar. This is, let me see what I can do to cut 15 cents out of this. We make decisions like that every day. It's a little bit easier when for a company like Braun or something like that. But when it's Stinger, it's really people are making the decision based on cost. They go into Walmart, they need something to kill their bugs. And this
Stinger
is it.
Is there.
Yeah, Stinger is there, right? I mean, I think our latest effort, the one which is a replacement for this, is even better. Because, I'll tell you why, because it's cheaper. And it's just that cylindrical pill shape.
So cheaper.
That's why I love it. It's a smaller box. It's cheaper. It just does the job. And it's not
now,
it's not styled.
Is it domed on the top like a contact
exactly.
capsule?
Exactly. So yeah, exactly like a capsule, like a pill capsule.
So you're going to stand it up.
It has the bottom cut out because just like this one, that's where many of the bugs fall out. And there's a lure. There's like a scent that fits in the bottom.
So
I guess, if you understand
the ideas behind it, maybe it's not so ugly, it's just not great.
I think this one's ugly, but it does the job. And I mean, that's...
Did it look good when you were doing it, I mean, at the beginning?
Well, to be honest, there were... I mean, usually, when you present a bunch of concepts as the designer, right? I mean, you've got concepts that you love and ones that you don't. Well, you should be okay with every concept. Otherwise, why present it?
Yeah.
So I think we were okay with this concept at the time.
Well, I think it fits Walmart pretty well.
Well, the guy that goes to a NASCAR race and, you know, he goes into Walmart and he's literally drinking Budweiser on his back porch. And, you know, we've talked to these guys before we design them. We're not idiots. We're not designing in a capsule, right? I mean, they like to hear the bug zapping. You know, that's the guy you're talking to. I mean...
Well, I don't
you're not
have a
talking
problem
to architects.
With
you're
the
talking
fact
to
that
the
it's
guy.
So open, if it was any less open, the bugs wouldn't be able to get through.
Right. They have to be able to fly in.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, you're not buying this, right? I mean, I assume you live in, like, an apartment in Manhattan or something, right?
Well, I have a house in Connecticut, but we don't have so many bugs that I need to zap them.
Right.
You know, I'm by a river.
And you're not buying it at Walmart either.
Well, I might go to, I occasionally walk through Walmart, although it kind of makes me feel uncomfortable. I'm more likely to go to Target.
Mm-hmm.
If I was going to buy a bug zapper, I'd probably go to Home Depot. But that's because, you know, I like to look at cool hardware.
Look at the tools.
I used to work in the tool corral at a Home Depot, as a matter of fact. I did that on a dare. For almost 10 months, yeah. Well, I was married. I was between jobs, which happens to architects. My wife at the time.
It's not bad. It's probably fun, right?
You're too big for your britches. I bet you would never work at, say, Home Depot. I said, yeah. You're on.
Well, good thing she didn't say Walmart.
Yeah. Well, and then she would have won the bet. But I had a wonderful time there. I learned about tools that I never knew existed. And then I took it upon myself, one, to not tell anybody who came in as a customer that I was an architect.
Don't do that.
No.
That's a bad move.
No. But it was really fun when architects did come in and they'd say, oh, I'm an architect. It's like, yeah, okay.
Well, guess
great.
What?
Great. Yeah. Now I just said, okay, fine. Go on. Yes, really. And then because of the part of the country where it was, we'd get these dads who'd come in, and price was no object, and they had this notion that there must be a tool. I don't care how much I pay. There's one tool that will make my project go. It will just make it sing. And they'd have some maybe they were going to replace some posts in their deck outside of their house, and they'd come in and they'd look at a $300 bush hog drill and they'd say, wow, I like that, you know, that's great. And I would say, yeah, you might hurt yourself with that.
That tool is hired help, I think. You know, it's
could
like,
be.
Yeah.
So I'd steer them towards a tool that would last a while
and they have a couple bucks left over to hire someone to help them.
And they wouldn't hurt themselves with it.
Yeah.
You know, there's some people shouldn't be in the control of really high horsepower equipment without training.
I like though that the Connecticut suburban hardware store job, though. That's about as good as it's going to get. I mean, you didn't have anybody coming in and throwing tools at you or anything?
No, it was great. I mean, what was really great, I mean, you both feisty guys, you'd like this, you know, was the newly divorced woman looking to get some tools for her house, and then anything else. Yeah, I could spend all afternoon walking them around the store, and it was great.
Did he come back next day?
It happened once, but then by then she had a boyfriend, which was fine. You know, it was okay. I was just there to be an educator. But we're getting away from design objects into the purposes that design objects.
Manuel's got to tell us about his ugly design.
Thanks, Rich.
We didn't forget.
Well, maybe you never did one. I don't know.
I don't know. This is like killing your own child. I don't know. I didn't do as many as you did, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, I'll let you off the hook here, you know, because you're a nice guy. You're my friend.
Thanks.
Whoever designed the gas cylinder in, you know, office chairs, you know, has got a special place in hell for me.
Why is that?
Because they always fail.
Really?
Sometimes they last 6 months. Sometimes they last a couple of years. Eventually, they don't work anymore.
Well, that's
you sit down and it bounces, or you sit down and it goes all the way down and it never comes back up again. You'd think that after 50 years of gas cylinders, they'd know how to make them right.
There's, I mean, I don't know where you get your chairs from, but there's...
Human scale?
No comments. No, I mean...
That's the chair I've got has a list price of $1,495, man. I don't expect...
Really?
Yeah, it's the...
And the cylinder fell.
Are you buying the next round?
I bought it at Designer's Triple Net Discount. Okay, right. It cost me $3.95, but that was a while ago. You know, it's the Freedom Chair, and the gas cylinder is starting to go. And it's only 6 or 7 years old, and I'm not a big fat guy, okay? Yeah. I haven't been doing kinky stuff in my chair or anything like that, man. You know, I think that's unconscionable. I expect that gas cylinder to be good for 20 years.
I think you have a warranty on that. I think you can
I don't think it's longer than 7 years.
I think it's about 12 years, if
really?
I'm not mistaken, yes.
Okay, well, you're true to your school.
I think it is. I mean, that's what I would do, but I don't know.
Okay. We're going to load it into your car on the way out of
so
here.
So what did you design ever that was maybe not as good as you might have? And how did that happen?
I think there's sometimes when you have your own view on things and don't get perspective from other people, you get trapped into doing things that are not fully cooked. I think always it's good to listen to others criticize your work and just give it another point of view in a good, honest way, in a positive tone.
Well, I found that's always good in the architectural world, that the more collaborative your design is, the more likely it is to be better than you yourself imagined just on your own.
Yeah. So it's...
Of course, I take a lot of heat from my colleagues because I often... involve the owners and other people in the owner's organization. I like the collaborative design process, and it has led me to modifying, including, compromising in ways that I never would have imagined if they just said, well, just, you know, go crazy, Curtis, do whatever you want to do. I think it's better when you have the input of the people like you're talking about with your clients who are actually going to use it,
mm-hmm.
instead of it just being simply a sort of masturbatory design concept.
I'm surprised that in architecture they don't do that like all the time.
Some do, but many do not.
In product design, that's just a given. Like, it's going to end up in front of people. I mean, you might as well talk to them.
Well, old ways die hard in architecture, and the paradigm there is you go and you do it, and then you bring it and you present it, and that's what you learn in design school as an architect, is you just do what you're going to do, and then you
present it.
And then you present it.
You live or die.
You better be charming.
Yeah, it'd be charming, and then they might...
Wear your best suit, right?
Do you think, then, that the jobs that get built are those the ones that are presented by the best presenter, not by the best architects?
I think in a lot of cases, it's a bullshit scam, and that people who win big prizes, like the Pritzker Prize for architecture, which is like the Pulitzer Prize for architects, go to people who are bullshit artists.
It happens everywhere, though.
Well, most designers are branded designers, right? I mean, they are using their name like a brand, like you would anything.
Well, I would
else,
put it
right?
out that actually product design has a higher standard of excellence than all of architecture. There's so many bad architectural works, and there are a lot of ugly objects, but if they don't work for what they're supposed to do, no one buys them again.
Well, I don't know. Let's...
I love the artistic aspect of architecture. That's one of the great things, right? I mean, it is a little bit more towards the artistic side, where you can do a concept and it's out there and you found a home for it with a homeowner that loves it, right? But
with a corporate
design,
owner.
Yeah, with a corporate owner or whoever it is, right? I mean, but when you get to products...
But it's
products,
just one.
Yeah, just but it's just one. You only need one owner.
You need one
when
approval.
You do products, you've got 500,000
You got
owners.
One approval of one person, one commission, one... Yeah. Whatever board that needs to approve
But for a successful product.
But I think.
I mean, you're forcing your own efforts through a finer sieve, and that makes it possible to have things like the design work that Brown has had through the decades.
Yeah, and I think
they've had their
ups and downs.
And there
actually.
Are very few buildings that really rise to the standard of a really well-crafted Braun or Krupps, I suppose.
Yeah.
They share a lot of the same design pool.
Mm-hmm.
Level of everything is perfect.
It's a much more complicated job, too. Remember, a product is a product, a building is a building. There's
That's
a lot
true.
More decisions.
Yeah,
they have
complexities in different
but you
ways.
But you do have the benefit that, you know, if you really hate the stinking thing, you can just smash the hell out of it.
Not buy it.
You could,
and that's
or after you've bought it and it doesn't work,
just throw it out.
I had a computer I threw out the window once. And I think that's a good cue in for a little Arthur Brown music from the 1960s.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
That's how I felt here, speaking frankly, on Burning Down the House, about an early IBM laptop that just quit working. It was before they had the ThinkPad line.
That's probably...
And I got so...
Was it a Sapper, Richard Sapper laptop? Or?
No. It was before the little red dot pointing device. Hmm. It was that old. It just
Did
kinda,
it work, though, or was it just ugly?
Well, you know, it was ugly and it was heavy, but it had a 16-color screen. It was one of the first color laptops, and I used it to go to great effect in my work. But it came to, at a certain point, because software had progressed, it just wouldn't work. It was like 2 in the morning, and I was not in the mood for this. And... I was living in Connecticut at that time, and the window was open, and
your neighbors love you.
There's always space around.
Yeah.
There's always space around.
That's what's good about living in the country.
Yeah, well, I never did that again, although I had a collection of interesting keys that had popped off. But I don't think that we've really built up enough steam to really get to having a real hate on. I think we're just too mellow here, that there are really no real design crimes that are actionable, you know, no real products that are...
There are a lot out there.
There are
Yeah.
They shouldn't be there.
I think the stuff that really burns me up is this: the stuff that doesn't work. You know, when you when you have a tool or something, you're trying to do a job.
What about the orange squeezer from Philip Stark? You know what I'm
talking
about?
Yeah, I know. It looks like a spider almost. It looks like a spider. Yeah.
Is it ugly?
I don't know.
Or is it just weird?
No, I think it's a weird good looking thing.
Space age. You haven't seen it?
Mm-mm.
It has like a... It looks like a spider.
That good,
it's
huh?
It's a little Sabbath that came in there.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I'm down with Sabbath.
It's Philippe.
Yeah. Philippe, so. Philippe loves Sabbath,
you can put some Sabbath, like, you know, quarter up under us. That would be fine. That goes well with Stark, don't you think?
That was the
I
idea.
Think it does.
Yeah, if he grew his hair out, maybe a little bit more. That is
I stopped
product.
Looking at Philippe's stuff, you know, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, because I got tired of the bull's horn motif.
He moved on. You know, he had a little bit of a breakdown or something, right, recently?
He's got a new girlfriend, wife. That's going to do it.
That'll do it. Change your perspective.
But he became very famous for just being totally outrageous. And
I think he didn't care. See, he stopped caring about what people would say about whatever he was doing. And... He got lucky
and then he got more and more famous.
You know, I'm sure he's in an office, right? And there's someone dealing with what Philippe Stark looks like, right? He's probably just doing just the most cursory of approvals.
I thought he had by now said that he was going to retire.
I mean, there are still stuff coming out Philippe Stark branded.
There's a new show on the BBC with Designing Life, with where he is somewhat of a Donald Trump, and he gets 10 people to compete to have an internship at his office for 6 months.
How outrageous. Do you remember the movie Beauty and the Beast, the Disney movie, with Torchère, the chandelier? But the haunted castle had the enormous chandeliers that were sort of threatening the beauty when she first came in. Well, a recent project that I was involved with, 95 Wall Street, in Manhattan. It was a conversion of an office building to rental apartments. Stark was convinced by Joe Moynihan, the developer, to design the public spaces. And you go in and the elevator lobbies are a hall of mirrors with these huge chandeliers. Really, really big, many, 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 many little flame-type candle lamps. It's delirious. And
so did he actually do the work, or did he just kind of come in and talk about what was important?
He came in and he had
and
meetings,
then
he presented concepts, and then his people.
So, but what happened with the chandeliers? What's a?
They're there. If you go down to 95 Wall Street,
that's what you just said. I think it's fantastic. I think he succeeded, whatever he did.
Well, it certainly it certainly sets it apart as a place to go and then go up in the elevators into your little 350 square foot rental studio.
But it's
with no light and no views, but you have a real experience.
That is
coming into the lobby. It would really impress your girlfriend. Just like, well, this is where I live, and it's all the red carpets and everything. And you get up and you're going down a hallway, and then it's, well, okay, where's the rest of the apartment? Well, this is it.
Yeah, you get a closet at the end of the hallway.
Yeah, so in a way, it's sort of a cruel joke for some of the people, but they're affordable. So if you have a job as an analyst at Goldman Sachs, which is two blocks away, you're not going to be home much anyway because you're going to be working 16 hours a day.
It sounds very experiential. Like
it's a trip.
Yeah, I mean, just
it's definitely a trip. Yeah. So, well, you know, we just couldn't get enough hate up to get into the butt ugly and the criminal. We'll have to do that. Thank you.
So what is it?
Roll the whole thing. Let's just in New York City, in the worlds of design and construction, visually based crimes are considered most heinous. A dedicated group of designers investigates these offenses. The Visual Victims Unit. And their stories will be in an upcoming episode of Burning Down the House. Because this week, we don't have any crims to send over to the DA, the Design Authority.
We're starting to think you just don't have it in you to get this mean.
Well, you know, we're all happy because it's Roberta's and we have beautiful food. And we've got delicious Brooklyn beer. We're not able to really get our crime fighting mojo going.
Next week we'll hold back the beer. We won't serve any food, and then we'll see how quickly we get into this segment.
We'll be angry as
hell.
You
guys need blood. Bloodthirst. Design bloodthirst.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's plenty that's criminally negligent if you walk the streets of New York. And I don't know if you guys know my number one suspect, which is the new Cooper Union building.
Ooh.
But we really don't have a lot of time to get into that. Hit me with the chunk chunk, will you?
Chunk chunk.
Not that one. The VVU thing, the SVU thing. Well, this is a program where we're just having too much fun.
Sorry. So I'm just looking for all this hate music.
It's but we'll get into it.
And here we are.
At the beginning of that, please, Jack. That's it. Thanks.
There we
are. That sums up my attitude towards that building. we'll get into that at length sometime. We're gonna have a real hate fest.
Cars
over
cars are. It's easy to hate cars. I mean,
cars are hateful in and of themselves because they hardly ever work the way that you expect. And then if they do, you're going to end up killing yourself because you're not qualified to be driving a Ferrari. But
well, you know, the nice thing about cars is if you fall in love with it, then you're willing to accept the failures of the, you know, the breakdowns and the alternators and the leaky gas tanks or whatever.
I mean, so I guess that you've owned English cars.
No, I haven't actually. But I
have a Ducati.
Yeah, that's true. It's not that bad. Only one fuel line failure on that bike.
You have a Ducati?
Yeah, that's.
They look good.
They look great.
Do they not drive great?
No, they run great for like a couple hundred miles, and then they take them in for service. And then
I see. Are they made by Fiat? Fix it again, yeah, Tony.
That's right.
Oh, you never heard that one before? That's what it stands for.
I used to have a Fiat. We were never able to close the doors in the vehicle.
That's why you have to fix it again, Tony.
Duct tape.
Well, I think we've about come to the statutory limit on
not very
our our conversation. Well, you know, that's Dalai Lama would endorse our conversation because we do not open our hearts to the world of hate and strife. But one of these days it may happen. This has been Burning Down the House, brought to you by TechServe, your number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer on West 23rd Street in Manhattan. Thank you to my guests, Rich Thrush, Manuel Saez, and also to Jack Inslee, my engineer, E.J. Dukoski, our producer, and to all the people at Heritage Radio Network, thank you. Talk to you next time.
The engineer Jack Inslee formally apologizing for all of those mistakes. Hope you enjoyed this evening's program. Thanks.
you better stand, there's no turning back. The field was ours, the times begins. But on this battlefield, no one wins. The smell of my free smoke and horses' breath. There's a bunch of industry.